Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and here we are for another week of our Turning Towards Life conversation. And you are all so, so welcome to be here. However you're with us, whether you've just joined us this week or you've been with us for 5.5 years, whether you're on a podcast or on live in our Facebook group, which everyone is very, very welcome to join, or on our turningtowards.life website, or who knows where or when you found your way to us, maybe sometime very far after Sunday the 2nd of April 2023. Whenever you're landing with us, you're very welcome. And here's what we do, is we begin every week with a source, a piece of writing that flows in to this conversation. And then Lizzie, you and I, we have half an hour to talk about it in a completely unrehearsed way. And it's been such a joyful, alive practice for these last 5.5 years, filled with discovery. So I'm so grateful that you're here again, Lizzie, this week, and for this wonderful and truthful source that you've brought to us.
Thanks, Justin. Hello, everybody. Oh, well, it's gorgeous as always to arrive here and just feel the, I think I've said this often, Justin, just the sanity descending, the middle of life descending on me. I'm really grateful for that. And I'm really grateful for this poem as well, because it kind of did the same thing for me. It kind of, when I saw it, I thought, oh gosh, this is what I need to read every day. You know, this is what I need to be reminded of all the time. And so let's read it. And thank you for being with us wherever you are, as Justin said, whenever you are with us, however you're listening. I spoke to somebody this week, Justin, who was one of the people who helps, who feels helped to go to sleep by listening to us. And it was such a sweet conversation, because there's the funny part of it, which is that we might be quite boring, which is a big possibility. There's like the sweet part of it, which is that our voices are comforting, and that we are somehow in relationship to people in their relaxed state. So I feel really grateful to understand that a little bit more, and to be in that conversation, and to be genuinely, truly helpful for people. There are some people who listen to us because they find it difficult to go to sleep. So I'm grateful to have spoken to one of those ones. And the person who I spoke to also listens for other reasons too.
Right. we don't just make everyone go to sleep. It's not the only function we have.
Not everyone.
I love the idea, the sense that maybe when we listen to something as we fall asleep, that the words go into the subterranean realms.
Yes.
So and find their way in that way.
And Justin, as well, I shared with you a voice message from one of my oldest friends this week who listens to us. And I want to appreciate her as well, because I think she'll probably listen to this. And it was so sweet and moving to have her voice message. She did like a WhatsApp voice message to me to say what it was like for her listening to our last episode. And every piece of feedback that we get, like, it never gets old. You know, any appreciation we receive, or any comment or anything, I feel like it's never boring, it's never obvious, it's never anything like that. So that's an invitation. If anybody ever wants to share anything with us as a result of your listening and feeling into these realms, please do. It's such a joy for us to hear that, and to feel more obviously the conversation that we're all in together. Okay, so here we go. This is We Have Not Long to Love by Tennessee Williams. We have not long to love. Light does not stay. The tender things are those we fold away. Coarse fabrics are the ones for common wear. In silence, I have watched you comb your hair. Intimate the silence, dim and warm. I could but did not reach to touch your arm. I could but do not break that which is still. Almost the faintest whisper would be shrill. So moments pass as though they wish to stay. We have not long to love, a night, a day.
Thank you, Lizzie. I'm mindful that when we started doing this conversation, we would often invite everyone to pause. And maybe that's the thing to do. It's what I'm doing before I read this. And if you're listening and you're awake, just to maybe pause what you're doing and take a breath. And then let Tennessee Williams' words reach you. We have not long to love. Light does not stay. The tender things are those we fold away. Coarse fabrics are the ones for common wear. In silence, I have watched you comb your hair. Intimate, the silence, dim and warm. I could, but did not reach to touch your arm. I could, but do not break that which is still. Almost the faintest whisper would be shrill. So moments pass as though they wished to stay. We have not long to love, a night, a day.
Justin, thank you for having us pause a moment to let it in as well. So this whole line that you just said yourself, like, can we just let this reach us? I feel like that's what this whole poem is about, really. So for me, it's this beautiful call to the truth that so much is passing us by and we have not long to love. And I often get this feeling, Justin, with those people that I really love, that there is never going to be enough time. Like time is never going to be enough to satisfy me. So I feel this all the time, this that we haven't got long. But that doesn't mean that I'm just having that thought doesn't make me immune from taking things for granted and getting cross about things that I don't really need to get cross about. You know, it's so easy for me to lose this perspective. And so I feel like this poem it's a framer, if you know what I mean. I feel like I need to plaster it down my fridge or something so that but then maybe that would become too ordinary because it would be there all the time. But just to have this reminder that almost in any situation where I'm being impatient or I'm anxious or I'm worried or, you know, some of these things are necessary, but a lot of the time in my life, it's a little bit wasted. You know, it's like a wasted something that I'm up to. Like, I don't really need to think about that thing again. I don't really need to get worked up about, I don't know, some domestic something. And somehow this reminder about love seems to right-size everything or give it some perspective that I haven't, bless you, I haven't, yeah, some perspective that I've lost momentarily or for days or weeks, maybe on end. But actually, I can't say weeks on end because at least we have this every week, the very least. And of course, there's other practices and reflections and conversations and community that I'm in, thankfully, that remind me of this a lot. But just to have this around and to have this find me feels very precious and very important and very perspective giving and very right sizing many, many things.
I've been considering a lot over the last week or so, and maybe in some way spurred by our conversation last week, Lizzie, how are we humans orient to truth? and how, if we'll let ourselves drop down beneath the kind of thinking that you were talking about, sort of worrying about things, which is always, seems to me, worrying is really a way to try and manipulate the world or get the world to be our way, which is the primary mode of being in the world that most of us have been schooled in. Is that's what school is for so many people, and then work is for so many people. You have to sort things out and get things done and figure things out and be in control. And if we drop down beyond beneath that, and if we drop down beneath the intensity of emotion that often has judgments of itself in it, like when we feel afraid, or if we'll go beneath all of that, it's actually not so hard to find out what's true. And underneath all of our heightened everything. But it takes courage to do that, because we have to do a lot of letting go of patterns that keep us away from what's true. And that Tennessee Williams is writing into that place. That to begin with something that we know to be true, even if we'll spend all of our time denying it, that we don't have long for anything, and we certainly don't have long for love, and that nothing stays. It's hard when we're caught up, certainly for me, when I'm caught up in overthinking, which is a very, very easy thing for me to do, or overfeeling, like overinflating things bigger than they need to be, to get to this, to really look. So I'm glad we're in this conversation, and I'm really glad that Tennessee Williams starts there and doesn't build up to it and just goes straight in. And then I was thinking, as you were talking, Lizzie, about this, that I suppose I've also been very, very influenced over the last week or so. I've been carrying on reading James Bridle, who we read last week. And I'm pretty sure it's in James's book that there's a part which talks about the kind of way of orienting to the world that is trying to control, which gets us busy, and the kind of way of orienting to the world which gets us soft and receptive and available to the world. And it's almost like I was speaking with someone from our professional coaching course this week about this, Lizzie, when we were talking about coaching. It's like the difference between being with someone with laser eyes, where you're probing and trying to get something to happen, and really sort of in the manipulating, as in reaching into the world and it's my responsibility to make things happen kind of way, or softening back into the back. This person brought this beautiful distinction about and said, oh, it's like when I let my eyes go to the back of my head, then I can be in relationship in another way, more receptive, more available to this very, very precious person in this very, very precious moment. And that, I think, is what Tennessee Williams is inviting us into, what it is to be in silence with one another, and how we could, but need not, always reach out to have something happen. We could reach out to touch your arm, but that would break something that is here, a sort of wonder and awe and delight and tender appreciation of the absolute miracle of being with anybody else at all, let alone somebody that we feel genuine love and care towards. So this, of course, there are times for the manipulating, having things happen way of being in the world is absolutely called for. But the mistake, it seems to me, that Tennessee Williams is reminding us is, we could live our whole life there. I could be with you, my dear, dear friend, and be trying to get something from you and wanting something to happen and always feeling what's missing and always, and instead, the other thing I could do, which is the one that's so missing for many of us from our culture, is let myself be open and available to the absolute and frankly completely inexplicable miracle that you are here and I am here and that anything is happening at all, which nobody can say anything about. There is nothing to say about how, why that is the case, apart from that it is the case, and it will be gone.
Yeah. My gosh, so much noticing happening for me as you're saying this, Justin. I was walking along this week down the street and I had this thought about like reflective observation, like what it is to have this eyes at the back of our head behind feeling when we're observing and softening and being impressionable, just sparked this remembering for me, because I was thinking about the difference between looking at something to criticize it or to correct it or to change it versus looking at something to receive it, and how those two things feel so different to me. Like as I walk along the street, I could be complaining about the pothole in our road or the fact that there's a skip that keeps blowing dust everywhere, or that the front of our house, the paint's all peeling off, or like I do look in that way. And I was noticing myself doing it and thinking, well, there's also all kinds of other ways I could look at this, like the shape of the street and the beautiful blossom on one of the little trees and the cat sitting on the windowsill. Like there's all kinds of ways that I could observe. And I think that's such a big distinction for me that's so crucial, is being present with kind of beady eyes is very different than, because that takes a certain kind of presence. There's like a determination in me to see what's wrong and to find things out. It's a kind of particular kind of presence. And then there's the presence that, as you're talking about, is like further back or something that takes way more in than the thing that might take that in as well. Like I could have that critical part, but it would only be a slither of me rather than where all my focus is going, all my attention is going. And then it leaves my kind of the aperture through which life can get in is very small in that place. But then when I become present in the way that you're suggesting, the aperture becomes huge. So what I then get to notice about people might include my criticism and my judgment, but it's way, 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 way more than that. And then it leaves me in a place of receptivity and wonder and miraculousness. Like even this morning, I had to go to the shops really early to get some milk because we ran out of milk. And we live really near a railway line. And we're in Southwest London, so the trains are going all the time on a quite a lively rail. And there's lots of complaints about the up and down of the barriers. And as I was walking to the little corner shop, I was like, oh, what are those barriers even go up on time and down on time? I mean, like whatever had to happen in history, I guess by most is kind of taken for granted by now. But that those barriers exist along every station. At every station, there's roads that cut across every single piece of railway where there's a station, as far as I know, along the line. And those barriers do their job every day, however many times a day. I was suddenly like stopped in my tracks at the miraculousness of whatever that engineering is and whatever that signaling is and whatever the humans are and the machinery is that enables that to happen. And I feel like, as you're saying, our culture pushes us down the road of complaint and criticism all the time. You know, this week I was in conversation with someone who's in a very senior role in a very complex political position, hearing something from his point of view that I'd also read about in the media. And I was completely humbled by how little I knew from the media. I was completely floored by, well, the horror of really how it was covered by comparison to what really happened in just one thing. And it really showed me how, it's funny you use the word manipulated. I don't know if there's a word bigger than that, but it feels even bigger than that. Like I'm not being manipulated. I feel like I'm actually being lied to in some instances where I think about some way that something gets told that's very, 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 very different from actually what happened. And I think that's seeped into me so much that it then begins to, has begun to, and probably has forever, shape the way that I look at everything. And I feel so opened to that at the moment. And maybe that's why this truthful poem is also so comforting to me, because I can feel my susceptibility to, even with my critical eye on that, which I do have, I'm still, like anybody, completely susceptible to someone else's version of what happened, in a way that then has that versioning become the way I version something. So if something's particularly critically written about, I think it fuels my critical part that then feels justified in being critical of something else. So I feel very, like alarmed and humbled at the same time at how we rarely ever hear anything from the right source, actually. And the world is so huge, how, you know, maybe we can't. But I feel that if I don't have poems like this coming to remind me, and thank goodness for poets and writers and the kind of work that we do that reminds us of something that's ours, not just that belongs to the world. Like when I start asking what of me is me and what of me is given to me that I haven't even chosen to pick up, I've just become something because it's in the soup of our culture. How can I question all of that? And how can I become more me rather than more of an amalgamation of all the things I should think, given the things that I read and the things that I'm exposed to?
Which is why I think so funny that we began talking about going to sleep, because although it's certainly possible to go to sleep to us talking, and I have often fallen asleep listening to other people's words and then had them come into my dreams weirdly and all of that kind of thing. I think Tennessee Williams is actually saying something that is really meant to wake us up very fiercely and very strongly, because it's not, when I listen to you, Lizzie, it's not that wanting to improve things is the problem, which a complaint, that what's underneath a complaint is always a wish to improve things for ourselves or maybe for other people. It's the way in which we have taken to be what we've taken, what it is to be a human, or many of us have taken what it is to be human, to be the manipulating one, the one who has to come at the world always with what there is to do. And like we keep on saying, there are many, many parts of life where that's really, really necessary. But I was thinking whilst you were talking about how, about what happens when we make that the only valued way of being a person. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. So how that then shapes and colours and poisons, actually, I think many, much of our lives where this way that Tennessee Williams is inviting us into is the appropriate way. So when we walk out of our houses into a nearby, if you have one near you, a wood or forest or park, and all we can feel is a worry about everything that is as yet undone, we are unable to receive the trees that are there for the absolute marvel of being that they are, or when we're in a relationship with a friend or a partner, or, and all we can find in ourselves is all the things that need to be improved about them or about us, and we can't find our way to receive the wonder and the total mystery of being with another person. In fact, I think the closer we are to someone else, the more we find out how little we know about them is what happens. It's the opposite to this. And about how I've talked a lot, and I know everyone has a different experience of education as a child, but when I think about this, I think about how we get schooled out of wonder and into achieving. Mm-hmm. And achieving has its place. I want to keep on saying that. Of course it has its place, because it's one side of a polarity. and how the world of work for many, 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 many people has had wonder completely removed from it because it doesn't make profit.
Mm.
You can't make money out of somebody stopping to have a conversation with a patient that they have in a nursing home. And you can't make money out of taking time to speak to the person who's buying their shopping. That this side that Tennessee Williams is talking about has been very, very strenuously taken from our education systems and our work. And it's an absolutely deep inheritance of being a person that we know from looking at newborns and very little ones. We know that that's a big part of being human.
Mm.
And Tennessee Williams, I think, wants to say, we don't have long to get on this. We don't have forever to wait to discover that the world is waiting to make itself known to each of us. And that we do not have long to love what there is to love. And we'd better start waking up, and we'd better stop treating it as somehow trivial, an interruption to all the other interruptions, you know, another thing to do, or somehow a distraction from all of our worry and all of our busyness. We'd better get with this because it's the ground of everything that's here and waiting for us. And it is, in many ways, the mark of a life lived with great care, is to be willing to be soft enough to bring our attention in the way that, that's the other way of talking about this, I think, is that this is a poem about attention, about what kind of attention we bring to the world.
When you were talking, Justin, I was reminded of all the times I've been called naive for having this kind of sense of what's important. And I felt such tenderness in that. You know, it's quite a hard line to hold in the context of the culture that we live in. And then when it actually comes out of someone's actual mouth in words, as a criticism or a protection or a, whatever the agenda is, I'm noticing that I'm just appreciating, for those of us who hold this as precious, how marginal it feels, how on the edges it feels to have this kind of approach. Like even in my world at the moment, with a little 3.5-year-old as kind of center of my world, very rarely do any parents around me talk about how much they love their children. It's like, oh my God, there's a WhatsApp group called Driven to Drink, which is like, children are such a nightmare, I just have to drink. And that's the kind of, that's what the name of the group is. And every time I look at it, I think, oh gosh, what does that even mean about everything? And so I, you know, this doesn't mean everybody in there's that's what they're about or anything, but even the title of things kind of gives me shudders sometimes. And to be someone who goes, this is hard and profoundly, hilariously joyful and loving and intimate and sweet, and thank goodness. It's not that it's not felt, I don't think, by many, many people, but it's like culturally, that's not what we all talk about. We don't have love-ins. You know, we don't sit there and talk about how much we love each other and how much we appreciate one another. It's like so much, even like seeing that so much connection is built on problem sharing, if you know what I mean, like amplifying issues and problems and that be the way that we connect to people. Like it seems so tender to connect through what's beautiful or what we can appreciate or what we love. And so I think that's why this poem is really moving to me too, because it is a, it does feel like a very marginal voice that's very a tender line to hold when everywhere around me feels like it's filled with complaint and wishing things away. It's like, oh God, I can't wait till this bit's over because then we can get to this bit or something. And so I feel, yeah, awakened, but also very tender to be a person who's a bit of an outlier and who isn't as strong as an ox or something. Like, I think that's the irony, is that the softer I become, the more vulnerable I become, there's a strength in that, but there's also a kind of vulnerability in that, because I just have to get stronger in my marginalness. But it doesn't mean to say I can go in anywhere and anybody can say anything they like to me and I'm just fine. I haven't got there yet. You know what I mean? I'm not like a Teflon person who can just stand for the thing I stand for and nobody can mess with me. I get hurt and I get worried and I get vulnerable and all of those things. And so, well, first of all, it makes me really grateful in this moment to be in a conversation where I can be like this and say things like this and love poems like this openly. And thank goodness we're kind of giving everyone else permission to be that way and to do the same, and that we would hold any appreciation of this with love and tenderness rather than, oh, don't be so ridiculous. That's completely naive. You can't approach the world like that. I actually think it's completely excellently radical to approach the world like this. And it feels, as you said, you use the word truth. It feels truthful to me.
I'll join you in the naive ones. You know, I've had that come my way too. And it's also really striking me that what you're not talking about, at least as far as it arrives with me, is something slight or, you know, there's a version of love that's not really love, which is making everything lovely. I don't think you're talking about that at all, that the kind of willingness to love that you're talking about, Lizzie, seems to me that this is what I know from knowing you, is also the thing which really makes it possible for you to speak up with great strength and courage when something really needs attending to, because we have not long to love. That this, the implication of Tennessee Williams' words, are not that we waft around in soft-eyed waftiness, loving the trees, and I mean it's in here, it's the ground of something, but it also can move us to really want to find out what's true and to speak up for it and to speak up for one another. That's also this same kind of love. What it's different from is the kind of distracted busyness that we've taken to be the mark of being a person in our culture. So that's actually the kind of, to me, that's the kind of going to sleep that we fall into. And gosh, I know, you know, I fall into it too. And one of the reasons why I swim in very cold water every morning is I get in the water and it reminds me of the madness that I've woken up into. The absolute off the scale inappropriateness of living in a way that keeps me worrying with thinking and criticizing myself, or trying to, instead of meeting the world with the softness and also the courage to want to respond. And it comes from here, and that's not at all naive. I think one of the reasons why Tennessee Williams is radical here, and I think in one of the very best senses, is that he's reminding us that we have a very, very deep kind of responsibility to take care of the way that we attend to life, that we forget, and also that many of us have played our part in teaching one another the opposite way, that we have to always be in a hurry, and we have to be afraid, and we have to be afraid of the next frightening thing, and we have to, instead of finding our own bodies, finding our own presence, bringing our attention to one another, opening to the miracle of who and what is here, and then wanting to take care of it. That's my sense of where this conversation takes us. So it actually brings us into kind of this eyes back of the head receptivity, and it also brings us into a really deep kind of committedness to life and to the world that's not at all, oh, just let anything happen. Although there are many things that happen that we have to let happen because we have nothing else that is possible in them. That's very, very different from narrowing ourselves into very hyper over-focused kind of grasping that is the thing that brings us, takes us away from one another, from our loved ones and from our children and from our neighbors and from our communities, and also from the possibility that we might find with any of our time something that's actually joy rather than effort all the time, which is the thing we're mostly, many of us are being told we have to do in order to survive, and many of us have to do in order to survive because the world is constructed that way and not this way.
Somehow, Justin, when you were talking, my attention went to these lines: the tender things are those we fold away, coarse fabrics are the ones for common wear. And I just got really curious about this dynamic in us that saves things, you know, or that holds things, the tender things we put in a cupboard somewhere, we only get out for special occasions or something. And then the coarse fabrics are the ones for common wear, like the everyday things versus the precious things. And I feel like there's all kind of practical ways that I'm up to that kind of thing. And then there's the, I'm just thrown into reflection of how do I do that with myself? Like which parts of me am I bringing forth that are the everyday parts, which might not be the parts that kind of go with we have not long to love. So I'm left with this wondering about tenderness and my tenderness, and that being, like, what if tenderness is a way to meet this not having long to love, rather than defending against the not long to loveness with just wearing my coarse fabrics all the time? That's the kind of, I don't even know if I've said that very coherently, but I feel like I need to journal or something, or wonder. I can feel a bit of breathlessness around what parts of me am I bringing forth that are tender and really meeting the not long to loveness that is true, versus the parts that I'm bringing forth that are not really meeting the not long to loveness and are a coping mechanism, or a, which is fine, but it doesn't feel the most truthful way to live, the most honoring way to live, of the not long to loveness, right? Being in the middle of my life in this moment.
I'm left just with one thought, which is that one of the other consequences of Tennessee Williams' invitation to us is that we might find in the middle of things the hilarity of it all, the joyful craziness of it all. So I want to really respect the name of the WhatsApp group that you talked about, because whoever created it had good reason to call it that. But I'm wondering about what WhatsApp groups might, the names for WhatsApp groups that might be born from coming to life this Tennessee Williams way. Driven to what? Or invited to what? So I'm going to muse about that as I head off into my day.
Also, I want to appreciate just quickly, Justin, all of the things that might be the things that might drive one to certain things when you have small children. There's also a way of looking at all that with the eyes of not long to love. Yeah. You know I can get completely triggered by all the bath water coming out of the bath and worrying about a flood in the thing and whatever. And there's also a part of me that's right there, not far away, that's appreciative and wishes I could splash all the bath water out of the bath. So I want to acknowledge that as well, that this poem allows all of that to arise as we're here and softening and present. I'm grateful for that too. And I want to thank you, Justin, for being here, for being open as always, and for everybody who's with us listening, whenever in time you are with us. And we're going to be back next week with The Source Chosen by Justin. If you're new to this, you'll realise that we alternate the sources. So one week it's Justin, one week it's Lizzie. And we're very grateful to have you with us for all of our rotating sources and all of our conversations. So thank you. And we'll see you here next Sunday.
Bye, everyone.